You see something in front of us? Han interrupted. Only Tanupe. Same here. Han reset the alarms, then cursed as they instantly reactivated. So whatever keeps triggering those alarms is coming at us. And we are running? Saba was incredulous. We do not even know from what. Think of it as getting out of the way, Han replied. He activated the intercom so he could speak to the Nogri. Get into the cannon turrets and let me know if you see anything suspicious. Tanupe had swollen to the size of a bantha's head now. Hanging to one side of the planet, Han could see a shadow-pocked lump that might be a small red moon. On the opposite side, a cluster of tiny wedge-shaped specks were circling above the clouds. That doesn't look good, Han said. Leia, how are those sensors? Han's question was interrupted when Meewal and Cockmame announced that there were ion trails closing on the Falcon's stern from all directions. Cheese? Saba asked. Tarfang chuttered something sarcastic.
Tarfang believes so. He points out that Killik fighters still use rocket propulsion.
A trio of crimson bolts flashed past barely a dozen meters above the canopy. Then a gruff female Chiss voice came over the hailing channel.
Millennium Falcon, this is Zark 2. The Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet demands that you bring to a dead stop your vessel. Stand by for boarding.
Han activated his comm microphone. Just a second. He glanced over at Leia, then pointed at the control panel and raised his brow. When she gave him a thumbs up and began to bring the sensors online, he continued. Sorry, you'll have to say again. Your basic is a little... Another flurry of energy beams flashed past the cockpit, this time so close that they left spots in Han's eyes.
That is clear enough, Falcon. This is a war zone. If you disobey, we fire for effect.
Han's tactical display came up, and he saw that the Falcon had an entire squadron of claw craft on her tail. The fighters were escorted by two heavy gunboats and an assault shuttle, a standard package for a boarding company. But it was what Han saw near the planet that really alarmed him. As he had suspected, the wedge-shaped flecks circling above the clouds were a huge Chiss battle fleet, clustered together over one tiny area of the planet. Leia, see if you can... Working on it, Leia said. A moment later, the image from a cloud-penetrating sensor scan appeared on Han's display. Most of the planet's land surface seemed to be covered by lowland jungles or mountain rainforests, but the area directly beneath the Chiss fleet was a brown smudge. A huge river ran through one edge of the smudge, and a tiny area along one bank shined red with thermal energy. The lock alarms began to chime incessantly, announcing that the Falcon was being targeted by her pursuers.
Millennium Falcon, this is our final warning. Bring your vessel to a dead stop.
Han pushed the throttles to the overload stops and dropped into an evasive corkscrew. Laser bolts instantly began to streak past on all sides, and the cabin lights flickered as the Falcon's shields began to take hits.
Captain Solo, the squadron leader's accent must be confusing you. She ordered us to stop.
I heard. Han's eyes remained fixed on the image of the riverbank. But that looks like a battle down there. A big one. A depletion buzzer activated as the Chiss continued to pound the rear shields. Realizing he would never escape a dozen claw craft with Fancy flying alone, Han activated the intercom again. Are you two taking a nap back there? Shoot something! The Falcon shuddered as the Nogri immediately cut loose with the big quad cannons. Leia's eyes widened. Han, I don't know if this is a good idea, she said. Killing Chiss is only going to aggravate.
Look, I'm not the one setting the stakes here, Han said. If I know my daughter, she and Zek are in the middle of that battle down there. And that means the Chiss are trying to kill them. So pardon me if I return the favor.
A damage warning began to scream, and suddenly the yoke felt like an angry snake, snapping from side to side and forward and back, twisting right, whipping left, then kicking and bouncing like a kid on his first bounce stick.
The Falcon went into a shuddering vortex, and more alarms screamed as delicate systems began to take secondary damage from the violent shaking.
Shut down number 4 nacelle,
Han ordered.
And if that doesn't work, try the others.
Leia's fingers were already stabbing at the control panel, trying to catch the correct glide switch. In the midst of it, a synthesized boom reverberated from the control panel speaker, and Han glimpsed a Chiss designator vanishing from the tactical display. Even with all of the shaking and spiraling, one of the Nogri had hit a claw craft. Han was not that surprised. Leia finally managed to shut down the number 4 nacelle. The Falcon stopped shuddering, but her acceleration slowed and the yoke grew stiff and sluggish. Han struggled to bring the ship's wild spiral back under control.
Han!
Leia's voice was brittle with fear.
You know what I was saying about aggravating the situation?
Yeah.
Forget it, she said. They're already mad.
Yes.
Saba's hiss had an air of thoughtfulness.
Master Skywalker did not know how far the situation has deteriorated.
Thanks for your opinions, Han grumbled. Now could someone get back there and disconnect the number 4 vector plate? We're handling like a one-winged manta right now.
Mantas can fly with one wing?
Saba gasped.
No, Master, Leia explained. That's the point.
Oh!
Saba jumped up and tapped Tarfeng on the shoulder, then started toward the back of the flight deck.
Why did you not say it was so bad?
A jolt ran through the Falcon as they took another hit, and Han saw on the tactical display that the claw craft were beginning to close the distance more rapidly.
Jai, how long before we're in the clouds?
We won't reach them,
June announced immediately.
What are you talking about?
Han demanded.
Of course we'll reach them.
June shook his head.
I've done the calculations. By the time we decelerate to enter the atmosphere...
Who says we're decelerating? Han demanded.
June's voice grew even more nasal.
We're not going to decelerate?
Another boom reverberated from the control panel speaker, announcing the destruction of a second claw craft. The boom had barely died away before the hailing channel grew active again.
Captain Solo, that is quite enough.
The voice this time was male, and very familiar.
Come to a dead stop at once.
Sorry.
Someone's shooting at us.
Han continued to corkscrew toward Tanupe, which was now so large that its cloud-blanketed face filled the entire forward viewport.
Is that you, Jag?
It is.
Jagged Fell confirmed.
And I will not tolerate any more casualties.
Then I advise you to order Zark Leader to stop pursuit, Leia retorted.
I am Zark Leader,
Jagged replied coolly.
And I am not at liberty to end this pursuit. If you do not stop immediately, there is only one way this can end.
You're a squadron leader now?
Han asked.
What'd you do to get busted down that far?
Nothing. My rank remains intact. Bring the Falcon to a...
You're the same rank? Leia broke in. Are you telling me a commander is leading the squadron?
Captain, actually.
Captain? Han began to feel sick to his stomach.
You're here because of us. You knew we were coming.
I should have thought that was obvious, Captain Solo.
Han did not respond. He was too busy trying to bring the Falcon out of her spin, and silently promising a painful death to whoever had betrayed them to the Chiss. Only a handful of people outside the Jedi Order had known of the Solo's destination, so it wouldn't be difficult to track down the spy and put a blaster bolt through his head.
But now that you understand, perhaps you see how hopeless your situation really is.
Hopeless? Han scoffed. I'm not even worried.
He shoved throttles 1 through 3 past the overload stops. The Falcon began to spiral even more wildly, and a slight tremble returned to the yoke.
Han, Leia said.
Yeah?
I'm a little bit worried.
Relax!
The yoke was vibrating so hard in Han's hands that it made his teeth chatter.
Those are rain clouds down there.
So?
So when we pull up under them, Han explained, they'll put out the entry burn.
You're entering a gravity dive?
June's voice was filled with awe.
May I have permission to record? We should document how you pull out, especially given the damage to our controls.
If we pull out, Leia groaned. She hated gravity dives. But go ahead. What can it hurt?
We'll pull out, Han said. Assuming Saba and Tarfan get that vector plate disconnected. And we'll need to know if there are any mountains in that mess. Better run a terrain scan.
I'll try, Leia said. It's difficult to get a reading while we're spiraling out of control to our deaths like this. Who's out of control?
Leia began to activate the imaging scanners, struggling to keep her hands on the appropriate switches as the Falcon bucked and shook.
Wait a minute, Han said.
They were so close to Tanupe now that all they could see ahead was a pale mass of green clouds, marked here and there by a blue blob of cloudless sea, spinning past the forward viewport ever more quickly.
Something's not right.
You can say that again. Leia sent the terrain scan to his display.
Look at this.
The map showed a rugged jungle planet of high mountains and vast drainage basins, with no large oceans, but rivers wide enough to see from orbit. It also showed a dozen cruisers converging on the Falcon's point of entry, their course and original locations clearly outlined by the huge vapor trails they were leaving in their wakes.
Get a tactical readout on those.
The data appeared on Han's tactical display. As he'd expected, they were drop cruisers, terrible in space combat, but ideal for supporting planet-side operations. And the energy blooms on their hulls suggested they all had fully charged tractor beams.
This is a setup!
Han pulled the three functional throttles back to three-quarter power. Not suddenly, but enough to buy a little reaction time.
Jag is trying to drive us into a trap!
Han waited until Tanupe's little red moon showed through the top of the canopy, then jerked back on the yoke. Jagatfell's voice came over the cockpit speaker immediately.
I told my superiors that trap wouldn't fool you, but if you check your tactical monitor, you'll discover your situation has only grown more hopeless.
Han checked his display and had to agree. A pair of Chiss Star Destroyers had appeared on Tanupe's horizon, eliminating all hope of escaping around the curve of the planet. Zark's squadron was cutting the corner behind the Falcon, approaching at an angle and continuing to fire.
Don't force me to destroy you and the Princess, Captain Solo. Things didn't work out between Jaina and me, but I still remember you all fondly.
Do what you have to, kid.
Han pushed the three functioning throttles back past their overload stops.
I always liked Kip Duren better anyway.
Leia slapped the comm microphones off.
Han, are you crazy?
She demanded.
Nothing to worry about, Han said. He's bluffing.
Han, Jagged was raised by Chiss.
They don't know how to bluff.
Must be why they're so bad at it.
Han winked at her.
Send Meewal and Cockmame to help Saba and Tarfang with that vector plate. I don't think we're going to need them in the turrets much longer. But it would be nice to have control of this tub again.
Leia activated the intercom and relayed the order. The laser cannons had barely stopped firing before Jagged's voice came over the comm again.
You have stopped firing on us. Thank you.
He sounded genuinely relieved.
But I cannot stop firing on you until the Falcon comes to a dead stop.
Jagged, we all know that if you were serious about this, we'd already be space dust. Leia replied.
What I can't figure out is why you're going to so much trouble to save us.
Your confusion surprises me, Princess. I should think the reason would be obvious to someone of your diplomatic and military background. You and Captain Solo will be valuable prisoners, and so will Master Sabatine and Buatu's master spies, the Ewok and the Celestin.
You're very well informed, Jag, Leia said, but not well enough. If you knew our mission, you'd know we're trying to end the war.
You would be helping.
I know you and Captain Solo came here to find Jaina and her, companion. I also know you want to help them smuggle a Killik commando squad into one of our command and control centers. I know your brother believes, wrongly, that this maneuver will prove to us how difficult it would be to win a war against the Killiks. He also believes it will make it easier for him to persuade the ruling houses to accept the peace that he intends to impose on the colony. Is there anything else about your mission that I should know?
No, that about covers it, Han said, speaking through gritted teeth. He'd assumed that some spy eavesdropping in a hangar or briefing room had betrayed them. But clearly, it had been someone a lot closer to the Jedi Order than that. Someone close enough to know Luke's entire plan. You think it'll work?
No,
Jagged said icily.
I'd have to kill you first.
Yeah, that's what I figured, Han said. Zark's squadron continued to pour fire after the Falcon. Another damage alarm started to scream, prompting June to take C-3PO and rush aft, but the clawcraft began to drift back on the tactical display. Still fighting a sluggish yoke and an out-of-control spiral, Han dropped them back toward Tanupe and continued toward the planet at an oblique angle. Han? Leia sounded worried. What are we doing?
This doesn't make any sense,
Han said. The yoke had started to shake again, and he was fighting to keep it from swinging around at random.
They know our plan. They ought to be coming after us hard.
Han, this is hard. Leia's gaze was fixed firmly forward. There's a whole task force after us.
That's what I mean, Han said. You saw that battle down there. Do you think the theater commander really wants Jag wasting his time chasing us right now? They should just blast us back to Adams and be done with it.
They won't need to, Leia said. Han, we're heading for...
Whoever double-crossed us made them promise to take us alive,
Han continued. The boiling red curtain of a Star Destroyer barrage blossomed ahead, jolting the Falcon and spreading spots before his eyes.
Leia... It had to be someone close to us.
Okay, Han. Leia pointed forward, where the hazy blur of Tanupe's atmosphere was whirling around the center of the viewport.
But what are you doing?
Just what it looks like. A planet skip. Han activated the intercom.
Hold on back there.
An instant later, tongues of red flame began to flicker over the viewport as they entered the thin gas of Tanupe's upper atmosphere. The Falcon bucked so hard that Han slammed against his crash harness, and the clamor of flying gear echoed up the access corridor. The barrage vanished as suddenly as it had appeared, leaving nothing ahead of the Falcon but the blotchy red surface of Tanupe's moon. Han pulled the throttles back to the overload stops, gripping the handles tightly to keep his hands from shaking.
See what I mean? They killed that barrage to keep from vaping us!
Yes, okay, I believe you. Leia's voice was still shaky. They promised someone not to kill us.
Yeah. Han's tone was bitter. I wonder who that could have been.
You're thinking Omis?
That's the only thing that makes sense, Han said. Cal Omis would sacrifice us in a minute if he thought it would convince the Chiss that the Alliance isn't at war with the Ascendancy.
Leia shook her head. Why would he bother making them promise to keep us alive?
Because he needs the Jedi too, Han said.
The moon ahead had swelled into a lumpy fist-sized ovoid, laced with a spidery web of dark rifts.
And if his double cross ever comes out, Omis would never be able to make peace with Luke if we were dead.
Their discussion was interrupted by Jagged Fell's astonished voice.
I'm finally starting to understand Jaina. Insanity runs in her family. Only a madman would attempt a planet skip in a damaged ship.
Han's not crazy, Leia said. Just good.
I'm sure you believe that, Princess Leia,
Jagged said.
But I'm warning No, I'm advising you not to attempt taking refuge in that moon cluster.
Moon cluster? Han peered more closely at the red lump ahead and saw that the rifts might indeed be interstitial spaces. He deactivated his comm microphone, then asked,
What the blazes is that?
I'll find out, Leia said, reaching for the terrain mappers. In the meantime, stall.
Han turned his microphone back on, then calmed.
Thanks for the advice, Jag, but we were planning on going around anyway.
Really? Then the Falcon must be even faster than Jaina always claimed.
Han glanced down at his tactical display and saw that the Zark squadron had taken advantage of his planet skip to put on their own burst of acceleration. They'd stopped firing, a sign that they now felt certain of a successful capture, and were arrayed in a semisphere around the Falcon.
Han cursed under his breath, but said, Just watch, kid. You'll be surprised.
I have no doubt. But please believe me about the moon cluster. It's gravitationally unstable. Every one of our scout ships has been smashed flat. You'll be much safer surrendering to us, and I give you my word that we won't torture or humiliate you during your interrogations.
Thanks, that's real good of you, Han said. Let me think it over for a second.
Han closed the comm channel, then experimented with the yoke, pushing it around and feeling almost no reaction from the Falcon.
How bad is it? Leia asked. She was still staring at the terrain mapper, frowning and adjusting the controls.
Bad, Han said. How about those moons?
Even worse than he said. Leia looked out at the moons, which were close enough now for her to see that they were all shifting around, bumping against each other.
It looks like something shattered the old moon into 50 or 60 pieces.
It must still be in there because I'm detecting...
Leia let her sentence trail off, then gasped and stared out the viewport.
Yeah? Han asked.
Leia raised her hand to quiet him, then closed her eyes in concentration.
Han tried to be patient, waiting for Leia to do whatever Jedi thing she was preparing, but they were running out of time. The two Star Destroyers had activated the tractor beams and were already reaching out toward the moon cluster, trying to block any chance the Falcon had of slipping into one of the crevices. Han activated the intercom.
Somebody back there, get to the repulsor beam now! We've got some rocks to move out of!
Han, no! Leia opened her eyes and turned to him, shaking her head.
We have to surrender.
Han frowned.
Look, I know the yoke's a little sloppy.
It's not that. Leia reached over and pulled the throttles all the way back.
It's Raynar and the Killix. Those moons are teeming with insects.
The Jedi stealth X's appeared, as always, as though by magic. An entire wing of dark X's hanging against the crimson veil of the Utagetu Nebula. They floated there for just an instant, then drifted over to the black ribbon of a stellar dust cloud and vanished. Darkness merging into darkness. The stealth X's continued their approach in full confidence that they remained undetected, and soon the bright disk of the yellow planet Sarm began to swell in the forward panels of their cockpit canopies. The Jedi pilots kept a careful watch for sentries, both on their sensor screens and by reaching out in the Force, and easily avoided a single inattentive blast boat operated by pirates. The stealth X's swung wide around the planet, positioning themselves to descend on the nest ship with no Force presence. It was in the lowest orbit, where it would be screened from attack by the rest of the fleet. That was the Dark Nest's vessel, the one where Lomi Plo would be hiding. And Luke's plan was simple. The Jedi would sneak into position around the vessel and wait for Admiral Pellion to arrive with the Megador and the rest of the Alliance strike fleet. When he did, they would destroy any craft attempting to leave the Gorog nest, and then they would go inside and flush Lomi Plo from her den. But Sarm was too quiet. There should have been smugglers and Membrosia runners flitting in and out of the nest ship hangars, and an entire flotilla of pirate vessels hanging in orbit. Instead, the fleet looked almost abandoned. Save for the presences they felt in the Force, the Jedi would have believed it was. Then, blue halos of ion efflux appeared around the sterns of the Nest ships, and the vessels began to accelerate. Now the Jedi understood the reason Sarm was so quiet. The Kylix had already repaired their battered fleet. They were breaking orbit and deploying to challenge the Alliance blockade. Luke dropped into a power dive, swinging wide around two Nest ships to avoid the sharp eyes of the Kylix sentries. Mara and Jason and the other Jedi followed close behind, grasping the change of plan through their combat meld. Kenth Hamner took his squadron and circled back behind the first two Nest ships, decelerating so their attack would hit at the same time as Luke's. Kyle Katarn's squadron peeled off and started for the far side of the planet. Tresina Lobi and her squadron broke in the opposite direction, heading for the front of the Kylix fleet. The remainder of the wing continued toward the original target, the dark nest of Lomi Plo. As they descended, Luke allowed his alarm to fill his thoughts and reached out to Silgal in the Force, trying to impress on her the urgency of the situation. She was still aboard the Megador with Tekly and the collection crews, and Pelion would listen if she told him the attack fleet had the jump now. She seemed at first surprised by Luke's contact, then worried, but quickly focused on what he was trying to tell her and returned his touch with reassurance. The Gorog Nest ship grew steadily larger in Luke's forward viewport as he grew nearer, and soon its pale ovoid began to obscure Sarm's yellow surface. The planet took on the appearance of a huge golden halo behind the immense vessel. Luke pointed the nose of his Stealth X straight at the ship's heart, using its own shadow to shield his squadron from Sarm's planet glow. The strategy did not prove very effective. Insect eyes were especially adept at detecting movement, and barely a moment passed before R2-D2 scrolled a warning across Luke's display. Target energizing weapon batteries. Thanks, R2, Luke said. The three squadrons broke into different directions, then broke again, and split into shield trios. Good to have you riding the socket again, old friend. It's about time, R2-D2 replied. Your survival has been improbable without me. There have been a few close calls, Luke admitted. The Nest ship was close enough now that Sarm had completely disappeared behind its pale orb. Luke could see a double row of turbo laser barrels protruding up from among the knobby heat sinks that covered its hull. The smaller weapons that would be attacking the Stealth X's remained concealed in a grid of dark shadows. Luke began evasive flying, leading his shieldmates on a random, wild descent toward the target. Mara and Jason followed as though their controls were linked to his. A burst of elation filled the battle meld as Kenth Hamner's squadron attacked. R2, are they deploying? A sharp whistle filled the cockpit as R2-D2 warned that the Gorog had opened fire. Luke was already dodging. He followed the line of laser bolts visually down to their source, then reached out with the Force and shoved the cannon barrels aside. The deadly stream of color changed direction and began to pour harmlessly into space. Luke checked his tactical display. He saw no indication that the Nest ships were doing anything except continuing to accelerate. R2, any sign of dark ships? Take it easy, Luke said. I just wanted to be sure. A turbo laser strike erupted ahead, bucking the Stealth X so hard it felt like they had collided with the Nest ship, which they soon would if the squadron didn't launch its attack quickly. R2, arm the penetrator. R2 beeped an acknowledgement, and Luke sensed the rest of his squadron lining up behind him. Basically a Jedi shadow bomb with a trio of shaped charge warheads, the penetrator had been specifically designed to unleash a series of powerful focused detonations toward the interior of a Kylix Nest ship. A message appeared on the display announcing that the penetrator was live. Luke dodged past the fiery blossom of a turbo laser strike, then saw a pair of laser cannons flashing up from the dark crevices between a pair of spit-crete heat sinks. He force-shoved the barrels aside, then released the penetrator, and simultaneously used the force to send the weapon smashing into the Nest ship's hull. His canopy blast tinting went black with the first detonation, but the two explosions that followed were so bright that they lit the interior of the cockpit anyway. Luke rolled away, then did a wing over and flew back along the attack line. With no dart ships to worry about, he was free to watch on his tactical display as Mara, Jason, and the rest of his squadron released their penetrators in 1-second intervals. Each bomb disappeared into the crater left by the previous one, driving the hole deeper down through the Nest ship's lair decks, wreaking increasing amounts of destruction and exposing more and more of the vessel's interior to the cold vacuum of space. By the time the last weapon detonated, the Gorog were in such a state of shock that all defensive fire had ceased within a kilometer of the impact area. Luke swung his Stealth X around and found a cloud of steam, bodies, and equipment tumbling from the crater, so thick it obscured the ship's hull. Once Luke sensed that his squadron had reformed behind him, he continued forward, using the force to clear a path through the cloud of flotsam and bodies still pouring from the Gorog Nest's interior. Luke reached the breach in the outer hull and activated the imaging system in his helmet visor. The dark interior of the Nest ship was immediately transformed into an eerie hologram of vibrant colors, with white-hot lumps of spitcrete rubble and glowing red pieces of Killix streaming up a long, seemingly bottomless shaft before they tumbled out into the void. The Stealth X's shut down their ion drives and descended into the hull breach under the power of their maneuvering thrusters alone. When the squadron had descended 10 decks, the rear trio of Stealth X's peeled off and glided toward the edge of the shaft. A few moments later, a series of blue flashes spilled out of the darkness as the three pilots came to an airlock and used their laser cannons to blast it open. A second trio of Stealth X's peeled off after the squadron had descended 20 decks, and a third after 30. By then, the combat meld was charged with excitement, as the Jedi blasted their way deeper into the enormous ship from three sides, cutting down waves of vac-suited Gorog warriors with their laser cannons, blasting open airlocks, and using the force to hide shadow bombs at critical locations. Luke and Mara and Jason passed the 40th deck and continued down to the 50th, the shaft narrowing to barely more than the spread of a Stealth X's wings. The excitement in the meld turned to fear and anger and all the other emotions that boiled to surface in the midst of a pitched battle. Then Kenth and Kyle and Tresina Lobi began to radiate alarm, warning Luke and Kip and Corrin that trouble was on its way. Luke was not worried. Dart ships were far less maneuverable than Stealth X's, and would be next to worthless in the twisting wreckage. But that thought came to an abrupt end when R2-D2 trilled an urgent warning. B-wings? Luke asked. Armed more heavily than XJ-3s, B-wings were some of the most dangerous and maneuverable starfighters in the galaxy. Are you sure? Luke tore his gaze away from the dust-filled murk ahead, just long enough to check his tactical display. At this point, the image showed only the shaft behind them, a flared column of space packed with descending starfighters. Ours? That question was answered when the blue streak of an approaching proton torpedo appeared on the display. Luke instantly poured on some speed and ducked into the exposed decks, leading Mara and Jason away from the detonation area. The torpedo streaked past behind them, then reached the bottom of the shaft and exploded. Luke and his wingmates were partially shielded by several layers of deck, but the blast reached them with enough power to beat down their rear shields and hurl them into the next bulkhead. Luke spun his Stealth X around while it was still wobbling. A constant stream of laser fire flashed down the shaft as Kyle Katarn and two members of a squadron attacked the approaching B-wings from behind. Luke glanced over and found Mara and Jason already using their attitude thrusters to move away from him, spreading out to lay an ambush. A pair of B-wings appeared in the storm of laser bolts pouring down the shaft breach. With their head-like cockpits mounted atop a cross-shaped wing structure, the craft had a vaguely human profile, like a man standing with his legs crossed and his arms outstretched. The first B-wing was descending in the upright position, slowly spinning around to search the adjacent decks for Stealth X infiltrators. The second was flying on its back, firing back up the shaft at Kyle Katarn and the other attacking Jedi. The first craft started to spin more rapidly, trying to bring the torpedo launcher on its tail assembly to bear on Luke's Stealth X. He grabbed the vessel in the Force and held it in place, then opened fire with his laser cannons. The startled B-Wing pilot applied more power, trying to break free. Luke drew on the Force more heavily to counter the maneuvering thrusters, and all of the energy flowing through his body began to make his skin metal. Mara and Jason began to fire too. The B-Wing shields emitted an overload flash, then went down in a storm of discharge static. An instant later, the starfighter itself simply came apart under the combined fury of the Stealth X cannons. The second B-Wing gave up trying to hold Kyle and his companions at bay and dropped its tail to bring its torpedo launcher to bear. Luke started to force grab the fighter again, but Jason had already caught it and was holding it in place while cannon bolts pounded its shields from above. This B-Wing did not even try to break free. The pilot simply launched the proton torpedo in the direction it was pointed. Suddenly, the electronics in Luke's cockpit were popping and spewing acrid smoke, and the spit-creed ceiling was crashing down on a Stealth X, and Mara was touching them through their force bond, surprised and worried, but somehow confident that they were not going to die. Not yet. Then Luke and his Stealth X became just so much flotsam. The laser cannons and broken wings tumbling away into the dust and the rubble. The fusel engines banging against the fuselage, still connected by a few twisted shreds of metal. R2-D2 was screeching warnings over the cockpit speaker, his voice barely audible over the roar of escaping air. Luke sealed his vac suit and activated his helmet comm unit.
I'm okay, R2. Prepare to abandon the craft.
R2-D2 ran a message across the heads-up display inside Luke's visor. The self-destruct charge is missing, and there is no craft.
I know. Just unhook yourself.
Luke could feel that Mara was not injured either, but Jason was more difficult to read. He had drawn in on himself and vanished from the Force. Luke opened a comlink channel.
Jason? Over here.
Mara's concern filled their force bond.
His canopy is smashed, but his visor is down, and I can tell that his vac suit is pressurized. He may still be alive.
Luke's breath left him in a rush of fear. Not again. He couldn't tell Leia that he had lost another of her sons.
Get him out! I'm trying,
Mara calmed.
Just calm down.
But Luke could not calm down. He felt as though he'd been punched in the stomach by a Wookiee. It took a moment to pick out her blotchy red image through all the rubble displayed by the imaging system inside his visor. But she was already wearing her combat harness, and she had her bulky G-12 power blaster slung over one shoulder. The battered remains of her starfighter were bobbing along in the rubble beneath her, and she was hanging onto the empty droid socket behind the shattered canopy of Jason's Stealth X. Now that he saw that Mara was already with Jason, Luke began to calm. What could be done, she was doing. But he did not understand how she'd gotten there so fast. Before the explosion, she'd been on the other side of him.
How'd you get over there? Bounced,
Mara said. She took the lightsaber off her utility belt.
You coming? Be right there.
Luke popped his canopy, then grabbed his own combat harness and slipped out of his darkened cockpit. He pulled the massive power blaster out of the carrying sleeve behind his seat, connected the power feed to the energy pack on his combat harness, and slung the weapon over his shoulder. A trio of Jedi presences arrived behind him, about 50 meters away. Luke glanced back and saw three empty spaces about the size of Stealth X's amid all the dust and spit-creed floating in the penetration crater. Even this close, the imaging system inside his helmet was as blind to the starfighters as any sensor system.
Master Skywalker!
Kyle asked over the helmet comm.
Jason's out. We don't know how bad.
Luke used the force to pull R2-D2 out of the astromech socket and used a utility clip to attach the droid to the back of his combat harness.
We'll need a hand evacuating...
Luke let the sentence trail off when an icy knot of danger sense formed between his shoulder blades. He dropped behind a stealth X and felt the fuselage vibrating beneath a hail of shattergun pellets. He peered under the belly of wreckage, but his attackers were too well covered for his helmet's imaging system to pick them out from the surrounding rubble. Luke worked to quiet his mind, to sense only the force holding him in its liquid grasp, lapping at him from all sides. He began to feel a mass of ripples coming at him from the emptiness ahead, from the shifting voids of beings hiding themselves in the force. There were hundreds of them, Gorog warriors rushing to the attack. And there was more. A stillness so fixed it was frozen. A cold hole that seemed to be drawing the force into it.
Lomi Plo is here,
Luke calmed.
She came after us.
Shattergun pellets began to stream through the fuselage on Luke's side of the cockpit, and he knew that his protection was disintegrating fast. Still peering under the Stealth X wreckage, he pulled the heavy power blaster off his back, then used the force to send a speeder-sized block of spitcrete tumbling toward an even larger one where he detected the nearest group of Gorog. The two blocks collided in silence and tumbled away in new directions. The shattergun fire stopped instantly, and images of warm bug gore and crushed pressure shells began to drift across Luke's imaging system. He spotted a trio of Gorog tumbling through the rubble, all six limbs flailing as they struggled to bring their carapace suits back under control. Luke swung the barrel of his power blaster around and fired one bolt at each insect, using the force to steady himself against the blowback caused by the weapon's massive energy discharges. Unlike the lighter blasters that Luke and Mara and Han and Leia had been carrying the first time they fought the Gorog, the big G-12s had more than enough power to punch through the thick chitin of a Killick pressure carapace. As each bolt struck, it literally shattered the protective shell and the bug inside. When no more shattergun pellets came his way, Luke turned toward Mara. She was crouching on the other side of Jason's Stealth X, trying to use her lightsaber to cut him out of the cockpit. She wasn't having much success. A small tangle of Gorog were floating toward her through the rubble, spraying Jason's crippled starfighter with shattergun pellets as they bounced from block to block. Luke extended a hand and sent them all tumbling with a violent foreshove. As they struggled to right themselves, he pulled a thermal detonator off his harness, thumbed the activation switch, and sent it after them. A sharp crackle came over his comlink as the weapon detonated, and his imaging system went momentarily dark. By the time the imaging system cleared again, Mara had cut Jason's canopy open and was depressing a button on his wrist to activate his suit's automatic stim system. Luke started toward them. He reached Jason's Stealth X just as Mara was pulling his limp form out of the cockpit.
How is he?
Still alive, Mara said.
Luke retrieved his nephew's combat harness and power blaster from the cockpit, then caught up to Mara and took an arm. As they force-pulled themselves toward a slowly tumbling chunk of spitcrete, Luke's imaging system showed a Stealth X-sized bubble pushing past through the flotsam. Kyle Katarn touched Luke through the battle meld, reassuring him, letting him know reinforcements were on the way. A moment later, the Stealth X's turned the battle zone as bright as day with their flashing laser cannons. Luke and Mara slipped behind the spitcrete with Jason. Luke used the force to hold the block steady so they could hide behind it. Mara opened the status display on the forearm of Jason's suit and checked his vital signs.
Everything reads okay, she said. Maybe it's just a compression blackout. Or a concussion.
Luke could hear the relief in his own voice.
Turn up his comm volume.
Luke started to grab Jason by the shoulders, but Mara pointed him toward the edge of the block.
Stand watch. I'll handle...
An incoherent groan came over the comm channel, Then Jason's face grew suddenly pale inside his helmet visor. His eyes blinked open, and he nearly sent them all tumbling by trying to sit up.
No, Jason.
Mara pushed him against the spitcrete.
Stay put.
He looked confused for a moment, then turned to Luke.
She's here, isn't she?
Luke nodded.
I think so. Can you see her?
Jason demanded.
I don't know,
Luke said.
I haven't.
A deafening pop came over the comm channel, and an orange flash briefly lit the battle zone. Luke felt the sudden anguish of a young Jedi's fiery death, then saw the wings and cannon mounts of a stealth X spinning past along with the gravel and smoke. He slid over and peered around the edge of their spitcrete hiding place, and discovered that he could indeed see Lomi Plo, the Dark Queen. She floated about a dozen meters away, surrounded by Gorog warriors, and encased in a somewhat cylindrical Killik pressure carapace. A pair of long, crooked arms was still extended from her stooped shoulders, pointing toward the twisted skeleton of smoking durasteel that had been a stealth X just a moment earlier. A second pair of shorter, more human-looking arms protruded from the middle of her body, while one spindly leg jutted out from the side of her hip, giving her an appearance more insectile than human. Intending to take her out with a sniper shot, Luke started to reach for his power blaster, but Lomi's danger sense was as acute as Mara's. A lightsaber immediately appeared in her lower set of arms, and she started to turn in a slow circle, scanning the rubble and looking for her would-be ambusher. Realizing there was only one way to do this, Luke snapped the lightsaber off his own belt.
Mara, keep the bugs off me.
Lomi Plo had spotted Luke and was staring right at him. The face inside the carapace was the same one Luke had glimpsed during their fight a few months earlier. A half-melted, noseless face with bulbous, multifaceted eyes and a pair of stubby mandibles where there should have been lower jaws. Luke sprang toward Lomi Plo, at the same time grabbing her in the force and pulling her toward him. She launched herself into a backflip, trying to wrench free, but Luke had her too tightly. It was all she could do to bring herself back around before he was on her, igniting his blade and thrusting at her abdomen. She brought her purple blade down and blocked. Then Luke glimpsed a white flash sweeping toward his helmet and had to throw himself sideways. Her second lightsaber swept past his shoulder, barely missing. Luke used the force to accelerate his spin, whipping his feet up over his head. He landed a force-enhanced kick to her faceplate, the tip of his blade tracing a smoky curve up the side of her carapace. Lomi Plo whipped both lightsabers around in a counterstrike, the short purple one driving for Luke's abdomen, the long white one sweeping toward his knees. He switched to a one-handed grip, meeting the white blade with his own and blocking the other attack by spinning inside and striking across her elbow, forcing her to lock her arms with both blades extended. She countered by bringing her knee up into his helmet, sending him flipping away, and then they fell into a vicious contest of strike and counterstrike, neither one probing for weaknesses or trying to set up a fatal trick later. Both of them fighting just to survive two more seconds. All their attention focused on blocking the next blow, pouring all their strength and speed and skill into landing their next attack just a little quicker, hitting their foes' blocks just a little harder. Then Mara set off the first daser. A shrill whine filled the comm channels, and the battle zone shimmered with a rainbow iridescence. The air inside Luke's helmet suddenly smelled like fresh-cut pallies. A side effect, he knew, of the aura-deadening pulse Silgal had developed to disrupt the collective mind of the Killiks. Deprived of the thoughts and feelings of their nest fellows, the Gorog warriors froze or launched suicidal attacks or simply collapsed in trembling heaps. And Lomi Plo hesitated, her white lightsaber hanging above her shoulders for a heartbeat too long, her lower blade caught out of position, defending a flank attack that wasn't coming.
Luke launched a furious assault, slipping under her upper lightsaber and catching her lower guard on the backswing, then driving forward and slashing at her midsection. She pivoted, dropping one side back, and Luke switched to a lunge, driving the tip of his blade deep in the belly of her carapace. For a breath, the Queen didn't seem to realize she'd been hit. Seeing Luke stretched forward and off balance, she snapped her mandibles into light and brought her short blade around to attack his arm while her long blade descended on him from above. Luke thumbed off his lightsaber and rolled away sideways, watching in alarm as her long blade slashed past his head just a centimeter from his visor. He rolled once more and saw vapor billowing from the abdomen of Lomi Plo's pressure carapace, then brought his feet up over his head and found himself hanging upside down, caught in a net of golden force energy. Luke knew what was coming next. The Merkur strike team had described how Lomi Plo had used a similar net to dice a Yuuzhan Vong captor into bits. A black, tarry substance began to boil from the puncture in Lomi Plo's pressure carapace, and the vapor plume disappeared. The Queen had plugged the hole. She turned and started to float toward Luke. The mandibles on the other side of her faceplate spread so wide, he could see the smiling row of human teeth they concealed. There was no question of reaching out to Mara or Jason for help. They were busy fending off Gorog warriors, somersaulting and spinning and force-deflecting shattergun pellets. Instead, Luke risked a split in his concentration and used the force to send a Wookiee-sized lump of spitcrete hurling toward Lomi Plo's head. The attack never reached her, of course. She sensed it coming and raised her hand, deflecting it straight into Mara. The impact sent Mara spinning, and a Gorog shattergun pellet slammed into the small of her back. A puff of vapor shot from the hole, then quickly vanished as the vac suit sealed itself. Luke still felt Mara's jolt of surprise, and to some extent, even the numb, deep ache of the wound itself. A fierce rage boiled up inside him, and perhaps that was what gave him the strength to break Lomi Plo's force net. Or perhaps she had just been distracted by the boulder Luke had hurled at her. It didn't matter. Luke pushed, and the net dissolved. He flew at Lomi Plo, determined to finish this now, but terrified that he wouldn't be fast enough, that he wasn't good enough to kill the unseen queen in time to save Mara. Lomi Plo turned to meet him, and suddenly she seemed the size of a rancor, with bristling bug arms 3 meters long and reflexes so quick that her whirling lightsabers were nothing but a blur. Luke drew up short, trying to shake his head clear, trying to calm himself so he could determine the truth of what he was seeing. But it was no use. Luke was too frightened for Mara. He could feel her starting to slip, feel her fighting to control the pain, and the Gorog were still attacking. Luke hurled himself at Lomi Plo again. It didn't matter that he would never get past her guard, or that he didn't understand what he was seeing. He just had to kill her. But Lomi Plo had grown weary of fighting Luke. She spun away, her long upper arms lashing out toward Mara. Luke locked his blade on and drew his hand back to throw, then found that his arm wouldn't come forward. Nothing would move at all. His mouth wouldn't even open to voice the scream that rose inside him as Lomi Plo's white lightsaber came arcing down toward the crown of Mara's helmet. Then Jason was there, slipping in front of Mara, his lightsaber flashing up to block. He caught the blow above his head and whipped his blade over Lomi Plo's and sent her white lightsaber spinning away into the rubble. But Lomi Plo had two lightsabers, and she brought the second one up under Jason's guard, pushing it into the abdomen of his back suit. The purple tip came out through his back, and still Luke couldn't move. If anything, he was more paralyzed than ever. He couldn't breathe. He couldn't blink. It seemed to him that even his heart had stopped beating. The tip of Mara's power blaster appeared under Jason's upraised arm, and Luke could feel the anger that was driving Mara, the rage at what had happened to their nephew. A blinding bolt flashed from the barrel,
taking Lomi Plo full in the chest and sending her tumbling head over heels, leaving her purple lightsaber hanging in Jason's body. And suddenly, Luke could move again. He used the Force to pull himself over to Jason and Mara, then deactivated Lomi Plo's lightsaber and tossed the handle aside. By the time he'd finished, Mara was already placing a patch over the holes in Jason's vac suit. Luke could sense that Mara was in pain but still strong, and she remained lucid enough to have applied a pair of emergency patches to Jason's vac suit. But Jason's presence had grown as elusive as when he'd been knocked unconscious, and the pattern of dark spray around the suit patches suggested that he'd lost a lot of blood.
Jason! Don't worry about me.
Jason's voice was anguished but calm, and his words carried the sharp edge of command.
You're showing Lomi your weakness. It's okay.
Luke peered over his shoulder, but saw no sign of Lomi Plo or her Gorog anywhere.
Mara drove her off. I did?
Mara asked. Obviously, she hadn't been able to see Lomi Plo either.
You're sure?
Jason shook his head.
We don't know.
He grabbed Luke's sleeve and pulled him closer.
You showed her your fear, and she used it against you.
Mara caught Luke's eye, then nodded past his shoulder.
I'll take care of Jason, she said. You take care of Lomi Plo.
Luke took Jason's power blaster and slowly turned around, quieting his own thoughts and emotions, surrendering himself to the Force so that he could feel its currents and search for the cold stillness that would be Lomi Plo. He felt nothing, not even the telltale ripples of her Gorog warriors.
I think she's gone, Luke said. I can't see her anymore.
Interrogation cells were the same the galaxy over. Dark, cramped, and stark. Usually too hot or too cold. The interrogator usually had a breathing problem. Some wheeze or rasp, or even an artificial respirator that suggested he'd been cuffed to a chair a time or two himself. This interrogator, a blue-skinned Chiss in the black uniform of a defense fleet commander, spoke with a wet snort. It was probably caused by the old wound above his black eye patch, a thumb-sized dent, deep enough to have collapsed his sinus cavities. As the officer approached, Leia's nostrils filled with the harsh stench of Kerak fumes, probably what passed for deodorant aboard a Chiss Star Destroyer.
You're awake. Good.
I'm glad one of us thinks that's good, Leia said. Frankly, I would have preferred to sleep until my head stops hurting.
Yes, the knockout Cass. After the trouble we had taking Jedi Lobaka into custody, we felt it necessary to be prudent with you and Master Sabatine.
He stepped back and gestured toward a sizable display screen hanging in the corner. On cue, an image appeared, showing Han cuffed into a chair similar to Leia's. Another Chiss officer, younger than the one in Leia's cell but with a harder blue face, stood next to Han. On a nearby table lay an array of nerve probes, laser scalpels, and electrical clips. A virtual smorgasbord of torture. Leia gasped, her heart suddenly hammering hard.
Captain Fell promised there would be no torture.
If you surrendered. Instead, you continued your attempts to escape until he trapped you against the shattered moon.
A Chiss is going to hide behind a technicality?
On screen, the young officer picked up a laser scalpel and activated the blade. Han responded with a sneer, but Leia could see the fear beneath his show of disdain. The officer brought the blade close to Han's eye, then made a very precise serpentine cut down Han's cheek, just proving that there were no rules for this interrogation. The letter S appeared in faint crimson, and blood began to dribble down Han's face. Han held his sneer, not even flinching.
I can only get prettier.
Please, Han, don't provoke him,
Leia urged silently.
It's just a scratch, the interrogator said. As long as you cooperate, it's the worst your husband will suffer. But if you refuse, my protege will be required to demonstrate his skills.
A surge of hatred rose inside Leia, and she had the sudden urge to show this little man who was really in control here, to